Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. In this corner, a man who knows what it is to buy his comics off a spinning rack, weighing in at a comfortable weight for his age, it's Uncle George. And in this corner, relative young pup, newbie level graphic novel binge reader, weighing in at none of your f***ing business, it's Epic Boss McFall! Let's get ready for Panel by Panel!
Welcome to Panel by Panel, where we dig into the back bins of the digital comics to find the gems and to refresh the stories that you may have forgotten about. I am Epic Boss McFall, and along with us is Uncle George, who experienced a lot of these storylines firsthand as I'm reading them secondhand. So, George, you've been reading comic books for a very, I don't want to say you're old, but, you know, you've been around for a while. You've read the books, right?
Yeah, I think Marvel Comics, the first time I picked one up was 1971, 1972. And most of those were the reprints of the old Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Monster comics from the late 50s, early 60s. And after a break of about a year or two, I got back into Marvel, again, focusing more on their Monster comics. But at this time, they had introduced characters like Dracula, Werewolf by Night, The Man-Thing, so on.
Nice. Nice. Now, when did, as just an overview, when did X-Men, since we're going to be talking about specific storyline, when did they launch, roughly?
The original X-Men launched in 1963.
Okay.
And they were always a B or C level seller. And then when they revamped them in 1975, then it just became this huge fan phenomenon. And it was a couple years after that that a fellow comic reader introduced me to what was going on with the X-Men. And I was just blown away with how great the stories and the art were.
Nice. Nice. Now, they're definitely one of the A-list teams, along with Avengers. The idea behind the show is I'm fairly new-ish to comics. 1990 era was my reign of comics. I read a lot of X-Men, a little bit of Avengers. And then again in 2010 and on, as an adult, I got into going to the public library and finding my big hunt was Civil War. And I found that. And then I just consumed everything I could get my hands on there, including one of my favorites non-Marvel related was Why the Last Man.
Yes.
A great series.
That was good.
The Walking Dead, of course. I read many, many, many of those. So I've learned that my consumption style is much like a Netflix style. Just catch the whole season at once. I like to grab story arcs. So I was very excited that even though they don't sponsor this show, I would take the sponsorship, but you and I both have Marvel Unlimited on our tablets and phones.
This is true.
And that's been a very cost-effective way to consume a lot of media there.
Okay, this is a golden age for being able to go back and read comics, because back in my day, the only way was to either know somebody who had those issues or shell out the big bucks to get the expensive back issues. But now you can go online, you can go to the library, you can go to your Barnes & Noble and pick up literally thousands of back issues at a fraction of what they cost in the comic stores.
Now, I'm going to support Marvel Unlimited in the sense that I can carry it everywhere. And what really restricted me from consuming big storylines in the past was to go to Barnes & Noble's or any other bookstore and buy the typically hardback, you know, sometimes it's a big paperback collection, but basically the big hardback collection that gives you the whole story arc. You're talking 40, 50, hundreds of dollars sometimes.
Yeah, something like Crisis on Infinite Earths cost $30, I believe.
Yeah, and there was a Wolverine one I remember picking up. I can't remember which exact storyline it was, but it caught my eye because there's very awesome art on the binding of the book, and it was $65.
Yeah.
You know, so Marvel Unlimited, I bought the year at a time and got it for $60-$70, I think, for the year for 12 months.
Yeah, the interface is pretty wonky, but it's worth the price.
They're working on it. We'll talk about the smart panel reader and all the other stuff, too.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the story you suggested we start with, which is the Dark Phoenix Saga. Now, I don't know why. I thought this was a modern story. I thought this was like a 2000s, you know, something more recent. And when I looked up on the Marvel Universe Unlimited app, I looked up Dark Phoenix. It showed me two or three comics that she was in, called The Dark Phoenix. And so I had to go to Wikipedia to figure out how to catch this arc. Now, Wikipedia says that the Phoenix Saga is X-Men 101 to 108, which is actually listed as the I don't have my tablet in front of me. It's the Unlimited X-Men, Uncanny X-Men on the app. It's not just the X-Men. But 101 to 108, which is 1976 to 77, I was very surprised to see that this story heralds that far back. That's such an impact on even today's storylines, that it heralds that far back.
Yeah.
And then the Dark Phoenix Saga jumped a few issues and went to 129 to 138 in 1980.
Right.
So I had issues. It the app failed to download some of the resources. So, you know, much like getting an old comic where a page is ripped out, that's what I dealt with a lot. But here's what I understand. I'd like you to fill in the gaps for me, George.
Okay.
Is they're on some mission in space. Or the first one I read, when 129, they're on a plane. All the X-Men are in this radiation-proof room on this plane, and Jean Grey, using her psychic powers to protect her from radiation, because we all know the mind can do that, right? And I'm going to pick apart a little bit of it, because it actually was humorous to see the different ways things were written there. But she's flying the plane, and the radiation and then the crash basically killed her. But she brought herself back as the Phoenix, or the Phoenix within her. I'm not exactly sure how that plot thread came together.
Yeah, they retconned it eventually, but the Phoenix Force communicated with Jean Grey. And at the time of the crash, at least at this point in Marvel history, it was believed that Jean resurrected herself with this Phoenix Force that she had tapped into at the time of the crash.
Okay.
And then they had been building up to the Dark Phoenix Saga for years. So they had Jean with this incredible power, because before she had been one of the weaker members of the X-Men, and the writer Chris Claremont and the artist at the time, Dave Cockrum, wanted to put her more into the forefront, to bring her up in power, to make her more of a viable member of the team. So this is the plot they come up with. And then they took it farther and essentially showed her as having unlimited power that was corrupting her.
You see, I was very unclear on if being human, she had corruption in her. And I know mind guy, because we're jumping to the
Mastermind.
Mastermind, thank you. Mastermind started projecting this, and we'll get into that in a second. So I know he started unlocking things for her. But in the meantime... As she's getting these... Okay, here we go. The plot summary on Wikipedia. Returning from a mission in space, Jean Grey is exposed to daily radiation of a solar flare and briefly attains her ultimate potential as a telepath and telekinetic, being the Phoenix. I like how they changed it. In the future, we'll get to that as well. Now, the Mastermind starts picking apart at her. These are some holes that I missed because, again, it was difficult to get through the comics.
Right.
Because of the... it wasn't just... I wasn't getting the story. I'm getting big blanks. But they end up, the whole Lilandra, am I saying that right? Lilandra?
Lilandra,
and the Shi'ar Empire.
Mm-hmm.
That story was coming to be introduced here as well. Apparently, they've been building up with it with Xavier and his psychic connection to Lilandra. And all of a sudden, she comes, and then the Shi'ars take her back, and the Phoenix opens up this portal to the world, to the Shi'ar planet. And they jump through. And here's the thing. I like modern X-Men and Avengers better in this sense, just as a feeling, because what I experienced in the modern day, in the 2000s, you know, 2014 and all that, is more of a reality of there might be misunderstandings, there might be miscommunications, there might be fights, but there's also people who are trying to talk and communicate and figure things out. Whereas apparently when these came, the way to sell the comics was everybody hated everybody else. I mean, every other panel is Scott being a jackass and Wolverine just wanting to kill everybody. It's like, wow, man, this is really dark. I mean, nobody got a lot. I mean, what Storm was always terrified of things because she had tight spaces freaked her out. Nobody really got along with everybody else. Scott and the professor just grinded gears constantly. It's very interesting insight into where this all came from.
Yeah, there were a lot of conflicts between the characters, but also some very enjoyable human connections. For instance, the friendship between Aurora and Jean.
Yeah.
The friendship that developed between Aurora and Kitty Pryde later. You know, as comic geeks, these are the kinds of friendships or relationships with women that we all wanted. These close relationships, and it's like the one between Jean and Scott, where she opens up this psychic bond between the two of them.
Right, and then they make out all the time,
which was another treat for the geeks.
It was indeed. So they, leading up, we said all that to say, once they arrive on Shi'ar, Scott just fires first, right? He just blasts into them. Mm-hmm. And then I get hazy on the battle because pieces of it didn't download. But what I piece together is somehow there's this big end of the universe crystal.
The Emkron crystal.
Okay. Why don't you fill me in? Because I know nothing about this. All of that got redacted, apparently.
Yeah, this is all preface to the Dark Phoenix saga. This is still the Phoenix saga.
Right.
And so eventually the Shi'ar recruited the X-Men to assist them. And what Jean had to do with her Phoenix power was to psychically enter the crystal and mend the faults and the flaws and the fractures in it that had developed so that it wouldn't explode and destroy the universe. So at that point, she was a friend of the Shi'ar galaxy.
Yes. So it ended because she saved, because the other Shi'ars were overthrowing, or there was some kind of rebellion going on where they wanted to end the universe, and she was the one, Lalandra, was stopping it. So the fact that Jean Grey, as Phoenix, stopped it and it helped put her back in power, they were now good friends.
And I think it was Lalandra's brother, whose name was Dokken or something like that, that was the driving force between the destruction of the crystal.
Right. Again, it was a little hazy because I'm into it. They're fighting, then not loaded. So I go to the next book, and all of a sudden the battle's over, and they're all working together. I was like, damn it, I missed something here. So in doing that and entering the crystal, that's where she really started to weaken those bonds that were keeping back the power.
Yeah, she really tapped into the cosmic power of the universe. And that just fed her dark side that was established as a part of her character. So that as she got more power, she craved more of it. And then eventually when Mastermind completely unlocks her inhibitions, that's when she's over the tipping point and can't turn back.
Yes. So that's jumping up to the Dark Phoenix. So before we jump there, she repaired the crystal. Because this is related to later when the Dark Phoenix comes out. She stopped the power through love. Like, it started to take over. It started to become this big thing. And I'm assuming because of her bond with Scott, because this, again, was redacted for me. I didn't get to read it. That's what brought her back. He reached out to her. She pulled it back voluntarily and was able to restrain the power.
That sounds about right.
Okay. So then, somehow, Mastermind, again.
So after that, they returned to Earth. Okay. And have adventures all around the world. There's a couple issues in Japan, then near Antarctica, and then the team gets split up. Beast and Phoenix believe the rest of the X-Men are dead. The rest of the X-Men believe Jean and Beast are dead. And for about a year, they don't know that each other is alive. And eventually, they come together at the mutant facility on Muir Island run by Moira MacTaggert to battle the energy being called Proteus.
Okay. See, and again, I did skip those because it weren't listed directly as the Phoenix Saga. And that's a good note. And that's the other thing that I will say, that's a downside of how I read, is I don't understand the time frames. You know, I didn't know that a whole year for the readers, that's what's going on. For me, it's a matter of minutes. And I'm trying to piece together a time frame. So that's something you're going to really bring to the table, George, is filling in. This is how, that's the other thing I really want to bring with this show is the experience of reading. You got to read it as it happened.
Yeah.
And I'm reading it in a whole different light. So we're pulling these things together and you just get these two different experiences that are I think is very interesting.
Yeah. It'll be fun for me to think back on my reactions when I first read them month by month.
And I agree. I get that some of the language of the time wasn't outstanding. And now I'm sure we have some of the same stuff. There's this one thing that Dark Phoenix says later that I just laughed. I was like, it was awesome. Just as, I'm trying to figure out what we would say modern day to be replace that line, but we'll get to it.
Okay.
So I know over that year, Mastermind slowly started cracking away at Jean Grey and giving her these, she thought she traveled in time at one point, right? And it's really just an illusion in her mind.
Yeah, and at this point, we don't know it's Mastermind, who was an original member of the first Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And so longtime readers were familiar with him. I wasn't at the time. But there were clues given. Like, for instance, there's a point where in his Jason Wingard guise, a light shines against him and the shadow is Mastermind's profile rather than Jason Wingard's. So there were clues there to longtime readers as to who's behind this.
And Jason Wingard would be his telepathic guy disguise? He makes everybody sees him as Jason Wingard?
Yeah, that was the image that he was projecting as his appearance.
Okay. And of course, this is all an attempt to prove himself in order to join the Hellfire Club.
Correct.
Which I thought, and maybe they've, what did you say, retconned it? Maybe they changed it. That I thought Hellfire Club was in London, but according to this particular issue, it's a long-standing New York City club.
Right. Eventually, they said they've got chapters, whatever you'd call them, all around the world.
All right. So he's picking at her, slowly but surely unlocking these dark passions, right? Because he thinks he's going to be able to control her, use her power to take over the world eventually, I guess. And where I picked up was in one of the third and final illusion, the one that breaks her, and I started piecing together that Mastermind is doing this, that she's – and, of course, it fills you. I do like – I don't know that modern – comics do this as much. I do miss this. I remember in the 90s even. You'll pick up a comic, and you don't have to have read the whole year previously. It will literally tell you what happened to lead up to this point, which if you're reading it back to back, it seems a little goofy. But since I'm not, I go, oh, okay. I can piece together the big missing gaps here. So she thinks,
yeah, it's a thing that's got pluses and minuses. For instance, if you're binge reading, then it gets tedious. But for new readers and for readers that, like myself, memories aren't always so good, it helps to have a little recap.
Absolutely. So essentially, he gets her broken. He gets her locked into this 1900s plantation style illusion. And this is where, again, I get redacted. It just did not download. She accepted. She became his Black Queen.
Correct.
And then somehow the X-Men who came to fight, I guess, came to see what was going on, got kidnapped. It was, who was it? It was
Colossus and Nightcrawler and Cyclops.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know better. Let me say names. I'm going to butcher them. So they're all there and she's going on. But the tipping point, so she's essentially the Dark Phoenix, but still under control. But here's the tipping point was Scott opened up that link between him and her. And Mastermind was already linked in and was waiting on him. They had a sword fight in her mind. And right in front of her, Mastermind kills Scott, thinking that this will break her and she's permanently his. Apparently it had the reverse effect. And do you remember how you felt about that little twist that had the reverse effect?
Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, he's going to get it. And sure enough, he does.
Yeah.
That was a really satisfying sequence to read at that time.
And I didn't get to read it because, again, it gets right up to where she's enraged.
Oh.
She's set everybody free, battling, and she pushes him up against the wall. And then, so what happens after she puts him up against the wall?
Pretty much she opens up his mind to comprehend all the power in the universe, and it essentially fries his brain.
Wow. According to Wikipedia, it says she uses a telepathic illusion to make him experience godhood, driving him insane. Mm-hmm. I wish it all, yeah, you know, I guess it would. So it breaks her ties. Now, I don't know how, what happened after that. The next thing I know, they're in an airplane. So between her driving him insane, they're in some kind of aircraft, because the next thing I read is they blow up over Central Park, which is like 20 feet out the front door of Hellfire Club.
Right.
So she right after
they defeated the Hellfire Club, then they're escaping in their Blackbird. Mm-hmm. And at this point, the Dark Phoenix takes over and she destroys the Blackbird while they're in it. They all land in Central Park. They battle and it comes more or less to a stalemate and she leaves the Earth.
Yes. She knocked them all out and she leaves Earth. Now, here's where that line I've been teasing all day has. As she knocked out the last one and she's floating over them, and she goes, the X-Men, we're quits. And then she leaves. I'm like, wow. I get it. It was a 1970s phrase or early 1980s phrase. We're quits. And I'm like, what goofy line would we put in today, you know? I don't know, because I'm just not.
I'm kicking you to the curb, X-Men.
There you go. I'm kicking you. There you go. So she kicked him to the curb, took off into space. There's a side storyline with Beast and the Avengers where he leaves them and all this other stuff's going on. Ends up out in the Shi'ar area. Somehow just makes a beeline to the Shi'ar area, I guess, because she opens up a portal. I don't know why. Eats a planet and kills billions of people in the process.
Yeah, not just the planet. She kills the sun that the
sun, sorry, she eats the planet sun. Is. Yeah. Which makes it go supernova. Killed billions of people, snowballing this next storyline. And then she returns right back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't really sure of the boomerang effect there, why she exactly did that. But then she comes to Earth, and nobody can stop her, right?
That's right.
And
almost nobody. Professor X does come up with Professor X and Beast come up with a device that they can put on her head, and that short circuits her psychic abilities long enough for them to subdue her.
So yeah, cause I saw that part. I read that part where Nightcrawler bamps and puts it on her, sets her mind on fire, as she says, and she can't use her powers. And I did not know how they did it. And according to this, I'm gonna let you tell it, but Charles Xavier steps in here. Mm-hmm. What did he do to her?
Pretty much he talked her down, and then when her guard was down, he psychically put in what they called psychic circuit breakers into her mind so that she would be cut off from the majority of the Phoenix Force.
All right, so that is the original story arc of the Dark Phoenix. Now, you said they've gone back and changed it, or would you use the word retcon?
Well, actually, the story's not over at that point.
Okay.
At that point, since she just wiped out an entire planet,
well, yeah, then
the Shi'ar galaxy, or empire, is they're furious. They want her. They want her destroyed. So they come to Earth. They teleport all the X-Men off planet, and they are going to put Phoenix on trial and with the intent to execute her, even though she is essentially powerless at this point.
Right. And I know there's a battle of honor they challenged to, because I did read a little bit of that again. It didn't all download. So they did this battle of honor. They're fighting. I'm reading ahead on Wikipedia. She somehow, Jean, it starts to lose control and somehow accidentally triggers a weapon.
Yeah, the battle is between the X-Men and the Imperial Guard, which is Marvel's version of the Legion of Superheroes from DC. Every member of the Imperial Guard is based on a character from the Legion of Superheroes.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, of course you got these, I think, 7 or 8 X-Men fighting dozens of superpowered aliens. And as the fight wears on, they're just realizing there's no, or Jean is realizing there is no way to win this trial of battle. So eventually she finds an ancient Kree weapon, and she and Scott are in hiding at this point. She pretty much tells Scott she loves him, goodbye, and she has the weapon disintegrate her.
And that's the end of, is that the end of the Dark Saga?
That is the end of the Dark Phoenix.
And of course, I know Uatu the Watcher was part of that last one. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see where it was going, but the story ends with Uatu the Watcher commenting that Jean Grey could have lived to become a god, but it's more important to her that she die a human.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel about that? Did you see that coming?
I didn't see that coming. I thought that there was going to be a way to cure her or something, but they had established that she did a big bad, so she had to pay the price. And originally, the storyline was going to be that the X-Men lose the battle, and the Shi'ar put her through a psychic lobotomy and then let her live out the rest of her life on Earth as a normal human. Well, Jim Shooter, the editor of Marvel Comics at that time, said, no, you guys are not doing this. She has to pay the price somehow. So the creators, Chris Claremont and John Byrne, came up with the storyline that was eventually published. Years after that, Marvel published the book, a single one-shot called Phoenix, the Untold Story, which they took original pages that had been drawn with the original story and completed the story. And it was kind of like a what if it had gone the way originally planned. So I remember Jim Shooter saying things like at the time that, okay, she just wiped out a whole planet of people, but now she's going to hang out with Scott and go to the malt shop and go to movies.
Yeah.
No, can't happen.
Yeah, he's quoted here as declaring that Jean Grey could not be revived unless it was done in such a way to render her guiltless of Dark Phoenix's crimes, which is interesting. Now, we're almost out of time here, but how did Jean Grey end up back in the comics after this story? Was this one of those where they finished a storyline and then a whole new X-Men story, alternate universe story came about? Or
What happened was, and this is detailed in an interview in the Phoenix, the Untold Story, in an interview with Claremont and Byrne. And Claremont was saying in response to one question that they killed off Jean Grey in a way that she was not coming back. And then John Byrne pipes in and says, not so fast. I have an idea. And at that point, that's all you know. And a year or two later is when they come up with X Factor, where the storyline was retconned that Jean had met, the Phoenix Force discovered Jean while she was on the crashing shuttle and had made her an offer that it would save and preserve her body if she would let the Phoenix Force use her persona as a means to explore humanity. So she agreed, and she was lying in a cocoon at the bottom of Jamaica Bay for all that time until she was discovered by the Avengers in a much later issue.
The Avengers are the only people who find bodies anywhere. I'm just saying. So, okay, awesome, man. This is great that you filled me in, and it's an amazingly impactful story. They're killing off major characters in the early days of doing this. I mean, you got to figure there's only 138 issues in.
And
presumably it's a weekly, I'm assuming, hopefully. I don't know the exact timeline, but it's probably a weekly comic book, and that's not that far in.
It was monthly.
Was it monthly? Oh, so that's like four or five years in then.
Yeah. And when we were actually reading it from month to month, there were points like there's one point where the Hellfire Club defeats the X-Men, including Wolverine, who ends up in the sewers beneath the Hellfire Club mansion.
Right.
And at the very end of that story, you see him rising out of the waters and kind of look upward and say, okay, now it's my turn. And man, were we excited to see what was going to happen next issue, because we were Wolverine fans and we were ready for to see him cut loose.
Wow. That's awesome.
And then when the Phoenix died, that came as a real shock, because this was a character that had been around since the beginnings of the Marvel Universe, and they killed her off with no apparent intent to bring her back. So it was a real shock, and it was a real loss because a lot of us had Phoenix as one of our favorite characters in all of Marvel Universe.
Nice. It's amazing going through those things, and definitely a different experience now. You know, when you can just consume it. And I did get, even without the parts that I could not read, I got that feeling of, oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so pissed off when that black screen would come up. It's like, oh, I failed to download. I'm like, oh, what is next? You're killing me. So one last thing. Fill me on this word retcon so that everybody knows what you're talking about.
It's a portmanteau of retroactive continuity where a writer will take what's happened but explain it in a new way so that what happened in the past, for instance, Jean Grey becoming the Phoenix, actually was something else, where Jean Grey was replaced by the Phoenix. So that's where they would write a story that explains things in a different way without really breaking continuity.
That gets used a lot.
A lot.
But you got to figure, you said even the X-Men got launched in the late 60s, early 70s?
The original X-Men in 1963, and then the new X-Men featuring Wolverine, 1975.
So it is now 2014. So you, mm-hmm. you definitely, with the way society progresses, the way we see the world differently, the way we understand mm-hmm. science more, and we want more of that inner entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's why I say I like some of the new interactions better, because I don't want to see a Scott that is just possessive of his woman and surly with everybody. I don't want to see Wolverine who really just lives to kill people, which is the feeling I got off of this one. I like the more rounded, deeper character. You do, need
and
to
at
have
the time,
that.
These were the roundest, deepest written characters sure. around. It's just that there's been 40 years of increasing sophistication in comics writing, so we've got a different attitude. There might be a bit more cynicality on the part of the reader than there was back then. At least for me, I felt like it was a bit more innocent time. For instance, I had a real problem with the overt sexuality in the X-Men that were done by, was it Peter MacMillan and John Cassaday? I may have the creators wrong, but it was when Scott and Emma first started their affair. And I'm going, man, this is not the Marvel Universe I would like to live in.
I get you, yeah. And that's the thing, too. That's why they have so many different versions. So you find mm-hmm. that one that you do mm-hmm. want to live in, that you do want to interact with.
We can close with one comment that a good friend of mine made. The golden age of comics is age 12, which essentially means that it's the comics that you read when you're ripe for entering the world of superheroes is where you will find the stories that hit you the most. So it's pretty true. It's like from my mid to late teens that my favorite stories were put out.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that. It's when I read Batman and Punisher, and those are mm-hmm. separate universes, but two of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, you can find me over on From the Helicarrier at thehelicarrier.com. You'll find when we get this show really up and going, you'll find this show at thehelicarrier.com. You'll see George here on this show, of course, every time that we record it, and he will make some more appearances on From the Helicarrier.
I'm looking forward to reading stuff that I'm not familiar with from the past 20 years, as well as revisiting the things that I've loved from the past.
Nice. And it's going to be a great ride. It's going to be amazing. Today was already a blast, George.
It was a lot of fun.
Do you want to tell people? You don't have to. Do you have anywhere you want somebody maybe to follow you on Twitter or Facebook, anything like that?
I don't have any means for that, so...
All right. Well, you can find more of me on House of the Bear, and we'll get a fan page up for the show, and you can interact with George there.
Cool.